Okay, so we're going to get started with Thursday's talk. So now we're going deep into NRDA. Just a couple of points. Please, if you haven't sent me your abstract title and abstract for your poster, please do so by 10 a.m. so I can come up with a printout of all the talks. And at the break, please see Harald or me, and we'll let you know if you present today or on Saturday. So I'm going to hand it over to Nico, who is going to be the chair for the morning.
Hello, good morning. So the first talk of the morning session is going to be by Mike Boyle, who's going to tell us about the Revenge of the Ninja.
Okay. As Nico says, I'll be talking about Ninja 2, The Revenge. Because as we all know, Samurai killed Ninja's father, so he has to get his revenge somehow. Unlike the first round of Ninja, this time around it was decided that there should be some sort of representatives, one from the NR side and one from the data analysis side. And I was more or less randomly chosen as the NR representative. Ajith is the data analysis representative. At least we are for the remainder of this conference. And then it switches over. So I'm speaking as something of a representative of the Ninja 2 collaboration. And if you're wondering what that is, it's 106 members, where by members, I mean just people who've signed up on the wiki. This may or may not correlate to people who've done work on Ninja so far or will do work, but these are all the members. And honestly, looking at that list, I would say that well over half have already done quite a bit of work, either producing waveforms or getting them into the repository or doing the actual data analysis so far. So that's what we've got. And just to give you a brief outline, I'll first start off with the case for Ninja 2 and the case for Ninja type projects in general, I think is quite a strong one. And so I'll go over that, and then just why Ninja 2 specifically, and sort of what are the relevant aspects of Ninja 2. I'll briefly go over the numerical relativity portion of the project, the requirements and contributions so far. That'll be probably the shortest portion because it's the most boring portion, in my opinion, as a numerical relativist. Then I'll go over the data analysis, which, if you want better details, you should probably talk to other people because there's a talk by Ilya on Saturday, and there are a couple posters that present things in more detail, but I'm giving a bit of an overview of that. And then I'll talk about the road ahead, what we have to do. We have to validate PN and NR input and inject into real LIGO Virgo data and analyze, hopefully, into real data. So the case for Ninja 2. I think the best argument to make for any Ninja-type project is actually quite an elementary one. And you can go back to just like your fourth grade science class and think of gravitational wave detection in those terms. So we have a theory. It's general relativity. It makes certain predictions. It predicts the existence of compact objects on the distant universe. It predicts exactly how they interact, and it predicts certain details about the emission and propagation of gravitational waves. And we'd like to test all these predictions, so we do an experiment. And in our case, that experiment is gravitational wave detectors. By that I mean, more broadly, not just the detectors, but also the pipelines. And one of the basic things you learn about how to do an experiment, how to do a scientific test, is that you need controls. You need negative and positive controls are the two basic types. And a negative control is where you're looking for something with your test. So to make sure that your test is working, you actually remove the thing that you're looking for and look at the results of your test. So the best the best I know of, way I know of for doing this in LIGO Virgo is with time slides. So for instance, you take the data stream from various detectors and slide them in time so that you know for sure there's no coincident, well, hopefully, there's no coincident merger in there. You know that for almost sure. So that's a negative control. And a positive control is where you explicitly put in the thing you're looking for and see that you can actually detect it properly. And that's what Ninja is, really. It's a positive control where we take the state-of-the-art idea, the state-of-the-art predictions, that as we understand them, of general relativity and look for them in the actual data. And I think that's a very basic thing. I think it's absolutely crucial that we do this test so that we can really believe what we get out of LIGO and Virgo. And of course, there are other positive controls. There are hardware injections and software injections. But I think, as I understand it, I haven't heard of any numerical relativity waveforms being injected. So, you know, depending on how much, you know, whether or not Alessandra is in the room, I don't know that EOBNR injections are, you know, exactly what I'd like to see personally, but they are something. So I think the Case for Ninja type projects begins with the fact that this is a very powerful positive control. It's not the only control that ever needs to be done, but it is a very important one, and I think we need to do it not just, you know, as a little practice warm-ups for, you know, showing off that numerical relativity can actually do things now, but longer term, I think this type of project needs to be done quite frequently. And it's not just a binary control. It doesn't just tell you, okay, our experiment is working or it's not. It gives you good ideas as to how to change maybe the pipelines so that they work a little better. For instance, Duncan pointed out that he worries, you know, the burst search might be looking, or the CBC search might be looking for too many SNRs. It may be stretching itself a little thin, whereas the burst search could actually look for some of the higher end SNRs and leave CBC to concentrate on lower SNRs, for instance. Or we might be able to test, you know, what templates actually predict or actually detect our best models for the physical waveforms most efficiently. I think currently we're using Taylor F2 SPA waveforms for the LOMAS searches, and maybe we could do much, much better by moving to something else. That's an important thing to test. This Ninja also lets you test things objectively. It's not just based on, you know, so-and-so says that this model is more quickly convergent, so we should use that approximation. It's our very best predictions, and you can objectively say this method works, this method doesn't work. And it allows you to test all sorts of pipelines that maybe aren't as frequently used by LVC members. For example, one of the parameter estimation codes that's going to be run, hopefully, is a new one by Samaya, Jonathan Gehr, and I think Kurt Cutler. And, you know, there are limited other ways for them to test that and get their methods out there and, you know, really make people sit up and notice them as doing good work. So I think that's a good thing. So those are all scientific aspects. And then there are also more practical, sociological aspects of Ninja. And just on the practical side, it just gets pipelines working together. Like there was a discussion a while ago about, you know, more quickly and automatically getting the output of searches input to parameter estimation pipelines. So these are just, you know, things that eventually need to get done once we're detecting hundreds of different events per year. that'll be important. And, you know, at some point it's got to happen. Why not for Ninja? And I think another aspect that we learned from Ninja 1 was very useful is at least the NR people tended to be very cocooned and, you know, focused on, you know, how to choose the best gauges and, you know, all the numerical techniques that are needed. And that's important, but it's also good to have to see your work in a broader context. And if one of those contexts is the use of these waveforms in data analysis, then I think Ninja 1 was excellent at getting us more involved in seeing what the actual challenges and problems are and requirements, really. And on the other hand, the data analysis people also got more involved in numerical relativity and got a better idea, I think, of what goes on in numerical relativity, what we can achieve. And I know Stephen Fairhurst was the main thing I remember from him talking about from our old group meetings at Caltech, where he was constantly asking Mark and Harold, just give me something. And Mark and Harold were always, well, we could give you something, but it'd be total garbage. Because at the time, it would have been, you know, they had, I think, maybe half an orbit or a couple orbits, and the data was just garbage. And I think now, you know, the field has grown where we are able to do things. We're not able to do everything. And I think it's important for data analysts to know what we can do. And Ninja is a good way for getting them really entrenched. So there were a lot of good aspects to Ninja 1 specifically. Some of the most touted things were it was a very horizontal structure. There wasn't just a lead investigator and everyone else doing whatever they said or, you know, failing to do whatever they said. So everyone's input had weight. Everyone could direct the collaboration in the way that they wanted or could try to anyway. And I think especially for something like this that's a long-term project that has important ramifications for the field on both sides, I think. It was definitely important to get multiple viewpoints so that Ninja-type projects didn't become hidebound like maybe certain other collaborations might be. I won't name any names, but then it also had a very limited scope. I'll go on to criticize in the next few slides the limitations of Ninja 1, but in another way, those limitations were imposed for a very specific reason, and that was with a very limited scope, you knew that people could achieve this with just a little work, so they did. The project actually got done, and that was very important. Just getting the ball rolling was crucial, especially given the horizontal power structure. You know, people needed to be self-motivating. And then as I said, each side learned a lot about the other side. And that's something that the importance of that should not be dismissed. So what's wrong with Ninja 1? This is a somewhat longer list, you may notice. That's not to say that Ninja 1 wasn't a good thing. I'm glad to have been part of Ninja 1, and I think it was a very good thing to do. But I think everyone would agree that the data quality, compared to how it is now, was rather low. There was less understanding how to get good waveforms out. There was even, you know, not great understanding how to do simulations properly. I know the spec waveforms best, and looking back on what we had, there were, you know, terrible spikes in the data, and, you know, who knows where this little feature came from? Was it gauge? Is it physics? Is it numerics? Who knows? And I think the community now has those issues basically sorted. And at the time, we were limited to two or maybe five waveforms per group. There was a total of 23 different waveforms, and you could submit five if they were part of a one-parameter family of waveforms, but otherwise you were limited to two. And I don't recall specifically, but I think this was a way of of just making sure that there was reasonable accuracy, reasonable data quality, because you know if you just asked everyone to put in whatever they had, you'd get garbage, and the science would be just irrelevant. But if people were limited to just the putting their best foot forward, then you could be a little more confident that would be a good foot. There were certain, you know, the physics of the actual waveforms that went into Ninja 1 were not the best. We're still not in a great position for that, but there were mostly equal mass systems. 3 of the 23 were unequal masses. There were a few interesting spins. I was actually surprised looking back that there were some interesting spins, but there weren't all that many. And we used just Gaussian-colored noise, and who wants to use Gaussian-colored noise? So to clarify what that is, it's you just take noise distributed Gaussianly around zero for your detector output, and then you color it by your sensitivity. So you could, for instance, transform into the frequency domain and then just multiply by the noise curve and then transform back into the time domain. But then the FFT basically would look like a noise curve. So that's what Gaussian colored noise is. And we used that in Ninja 1, and there are certain problems with that because the real detector data has transients that are presumably not in spirals and mergers and ring downs, but are, I don't know, wires just expanding slightly or airplanes going over or who knows what. And it's important for data analysts to be able to see, have those transients ringing off their templates. And that allows them to set thresholds better or understand the output of their pipelines a little better. Also, in my opinion, the biggest problem, maybe this is because I have a very particular viewpoint, but the biggest problem from my viewpoint was short waveforms. There were no hybrids accepted in Ninja 1. Even if you had them, you couldn't put them in. And so if you look at the short waveforms, so the typical, I think the average initial frequency of the waveforms in Ninja 1 was 0.076. And the median injection mass was 155 solar masses. And that's a pretty large mass for your system. But you're kind of limited to that because just to the left of this plot, the signal goes off. And you can see the on the blue line here, those wiggles are startup transients because, you know, your data is nothing, 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 and then suddenly you've got amplitude. So, of course, the Fourier transform is going to be ugly, and that's not a realistic signal, and it leaks into higher frequency data. We were limited to rather high masses. The lowest mass that was injected in Ninja 1 was 36 solar masses. And that's interesting astrophysically, but other interesting mass ranges exist. For instance, you might want to go down to 10 solar masses. And if you did that with this typical Ninja 1 waveform, this is what it would look like. Basically, everything you'd have in band, it looks like startup transients to me. And yeah, you couldn't do anything, really, because the physical waveform looks more like this, and the match between those is tiny. You'd get better match out of noise, probably. So that really limited the astrophysical relevance of Ninja 1 pretty severely. And so we'd like to improve on that. And so summing up, what was wrong with Ninja 1? Well, basically, there were a lot of good things to say about Ninja 1, but it wasn't the best Ninja. It kind of looks like a toddler in a onesie. That's not very intimidating. That's, you know, cute and adorable and all, but it's not what you want out of your Ninja. Out of a Ninja, you want a badass. You want, you know, somebody who's going to get the job done no matter what it takes, a ruthless mercenary. Failing that, we'll just settle for anyone with a pair of nunchucks. So this guy is... you know, he's a little tougher. You don't want to make him angry, but he's still a little cute and cuddly. So there's Ninja 2 for you. So how is Ninja 2 better? Basically, we've addressed all of the points that I brought up, at least. There may be other problems with Ninja 1 that I just didn't think of. But we've addressed, if not completely resolved, all the problems from Ninja 1. So I think everyone could also agree that we now have higher quality data as a community. We've just gotten better at simulating and extracting waveforms. We've now imposed basic accuracy requirements on all the waveforms so that if, you know, BAM has a lot of waveforms that meet the accuracy requirements, so why not put them in? And there are more interesting physics. Now that people have gotten more robust codes, they're able to simulate higher mass ratios, although none of those seem to have made it into the repository yet. There are, but more of the contributed waveforms so far are non-trivial mass ratios. Well, not trivial. Non-1 mass ratios. And there are more interesting spins. Hopefully, any day now, we'll get an MOU signed with LIGO Virgo that will allow us to use actual data instead of the noise. This data may be time-shifted or whatever, but it's actual data containing actual transients. And, of course, now we've all got hybrids, which makes me very happy anyway. In theory. So, with regards to numerical relativity, again, this will be brief. Those accuracy requirements are still fairly basic, but you know, it's important to enable everyone to contribute and to have a wide range of waveforms contributed. So each waveform has to have at least 5 orbits, which we can all handle now. And it has to be accurate to less than 5% in amplitude over the course of the waveform, and accurate to less than 0.5 radians. We're not extremely picky about how you measure this because there's some disagreement on, you know, should you be allowed to, if you've got a convergence series, for instance, should you be allowed to time shift those to get your best accuracy reading? Maybe, you know, maybe we should plot things as a function of the frequency. But then the frequency is noisy, so let's not do that. So, you know, as long as you can make a credible case that your accuracy is up to these standards, we'll let you in. It's not a mean collaboration, I think. And then you need to be able to stitch to PN at a frequency less than 0.075. This is a reasonable frequency. It's, you know, not every simulation that gets run goes down to that frequency, but certainly plenty of them are. And I think just throwing a little more computer time at a system can easily get it down there. And then the full hybrid, including the PN, has to extend down to 20 hertz at 10 solar masses. And that's something that's changed a little in the beginning. We softened it initially. Someone definitely other than me insisted that we should do 10 hertz at 3 solar masses, and that's difficult. That, you know, that's about the in the time domain that would be about 80 times longer than this requirement. So it was eventually softened, and then, for instance, it was pointed out that we'll be using initial LIGO because that's all that exists, and Virgo data. And so we don't really need to push all the way down to 10 hertz. And even advanced LIGO isn't going to get to 10 hertz anytime extremely soon. There will probably be a Ninja 3 before that happens. So why push ourselves too hard? And then, yeah, so we've got a lot of contributed data so far. There are over 50 waveforms in there. About half are equal mass, and the largest mass ratio is still just 4 to 1, but there are a lot of non-1 mass ratios. The spins get up to 0.9, I think was the highest I saw in there. And they're mostly quasi-circular data, no eccentricity removal on those ones, but there are certainly waveforms in there with eccentricity removal, where you iteratively you simulate the beginning of the system, and you measure the eccentricity and readjust your initial data so that there's less eccentricity. And so far, only about half are hybrids. So right now, we're definitely starting to do some serious work in Ninja 2, but we've only got colored Gaussian noise, and we don't have the real data. So it was decided that, you know, people couldn't quite get their hybrids in on the initial timeline. So we've accepted purely numerical data, and so about half of, roughly half, just eyeballing it, look like they're hybrids, and half are just numerical data. And so we, just a minor note, we introduced a new data format that I think will, going forward, will be important, because as you push to lower frequencies and lower masses, you really start getting long, long waveforms. And as everyone's numerical methods improve, we're able to extract higher modes, so you've got, for each waveform, you've got multiple modes. So this new data format is stored at each point in time, you store in amplitude and phase rather than real and imaginary data. And then if you look at the full waveform, it can stretch for millions of m. And you need, for the high mass system, you need fine resolution in the merger portion. You need to be able to resolve what's going on right near the merger and ring down so that you don't get all sorts of aliasing. But then for the low mass systems, you also need the full extent of the data. So if you keep all that around, it can easily get up to, you know, millions upon millions of data points for each mode. And that gets a little dodgy when everyone's contributing all these waveforms. So we decided that you can just remove the points that you don't need. Early on, the phase and amplitude are very slowly varying. So if you just linearly interpolated them, it turns out that you can get rid of most of those points. And given, say you want to linearly interpolate to within, you know, 10 to the fifth, a part in 10 to the fifth of the original data, then you can typically get about a 95% reduction in the data size. So that's very good. And if you lower your tolerances, then you can get far, far better compression. And as you go to longer waveforms, you need fewer and fewer data points. So really pushing it down to those, you know, very low frequencies is not a problem from this perspective. Maybe a problem from the perspective of actually getting good coherent PN waveforms for that entire duration, but that's another matter. So then there's a question, what about precession? We're not including precession in Ninja 2. And there are people who object to this. A lot of people are very strongly against having precession in there, and then a few people are very strongly for it. But I guess because of the numbers, the non-precession side won out. And as I see it, there are a couple arguments on either side. So we know that there will be we hope that there will be precessing binaries in LIGO-Virgo data at some point. And the effects of that precession on data analysis are not well known. So why not just, you know, get started at least on trying to understand that. And that's, I think, a very strong argument. But then, on the other hand, precession binaries are sort of a little on the new side, and certainly making hybrids of those precessing binaries is quite new. And I think a lot of people don't have a great deal of confidence in the accuracy of those hybrids. So from the beginning, we've kept Ninja simple and conservative. So that's the one that won out. I think people were worried about the additional tasks that would be required of everyone, people on either side, to analyze the presizing binaries. So not yet. Maybe for Ninja 3. Maybe if we have time, we could discuss this. I have the feeling that certain people would like to air their views. So I'll move on to data analysis. As I've said, a lot of this will be in posters and Ilya's talk later, so I won't go into great depth. But the target data set is real LIGO Virgo data, S5 VSR1 data used as the noise stand-in, and the hope is that that'll be done soon. We'll see. And then just throw in as many waveforms as you can comfortably fit into the data. So given our set of waveforms in the repository, you just sort of make up total masses for them and sky positions and just repeatedly throw them onto the data set until things get a little too crowded. And then hopefully we'll be injecting using the most astrophysically realistic distributions that we can, because things have definitely crept up in the first go rounds of creating the data sets that were unexpected. If you inject naively, then there are certain problems. Your data set will be biased towards things that just aren't going to be seen astrophysically. So, for instance, the SNR distribution. The first suggestion was to inject with SNRs uniformly distributed from 5.5 or something, or maybe 3, to 100 or a few hundred maybe. And it was pointed out that that's not what the astrophysical system is going to look like. It's going to be more 1 over SNR-ish in probability space. So that's the plan for the final data set, to use the most realistic distributions we can get. And then there will be two data sets. One will be a training set of just 1 month where everyone knows the parameters, just like the Mach-Lisa data challenge. There'll be one where everyone knows the parameters and just goes out and looks for them and, you know, sets up their pipelines so that they're able to detect those things. And then there will be a challenge with hidden parameters and the data set for that will last about 2 months. And everyone will analyze that, and at the end of it, Larn will pop out of a box with the list of parameters injected. So we're not there yet, though. Obviously, we don't have an MOU signed, so we can't use LIGO Virgo data. So far, we're just using Gaussian colored noise, and we're injecting some of those non-hybrid waveforms, hopefully. By the time the next go-round happens, all those non-hybrid waveforms will be turned into beautiful hybrid waveforms. And then there have been three test sets so far. The first was just a one-week set to work out the bugs. And then the second was a one-week set to work out the bugs. And the third is an eight-week set with the bugs worked out. They're totally gone. There are no more bugs in there. So I don't mean to make a joke of this. It has been really surprising where all the tiny little problems creep up. Lauren has been working quite hard on this. I don't mean to slight anyone else who's also been putting in time, but I think, was it Satya who also was working? But I know Lauren has put a lot of work into this, and he's been very carefully making sure the data is just as good as we could possibly get. So right now there's an eight-week set out there that's Gaussian colored noise, and people are starting to work on it. And yeah, there are no suggestions at the moment that the data is particularly unrealistic, other than in ways we already know. Gaussianity, for instance. But of course, CLARN's poster. He'll be describing this in more detail, exactly what went into the data set. So moving on to the pipelines, there are two classes. There's detection and parameter estimation. And so starting off with the low-mass CBC pipeline, this is a template bank of non-spinning Taylor F2 templates terminated at ISCO. The total masses are just low mass. They're 2 to 35 solar masses, so that if you look at the signal versus against the noise curve, most of what you see is just sort of in spiraliness. So we feel okay using just Taylor F2 templates. And then, so there are a few steps in the detection. First of all, the pipeline doesn't report anything with an SNR below 5.5. And then every event that rings off a template, you look for it, you look at it, and you look for a coincidence and at least two detectors. Three is nice, but two is acceptable. Because obviously there are some places on the sky where one detector will be rather insensitive, so it just won't see it, or maybe the noise was especially loud, who knows. And then you rank by something called the combined effective SNR, which, I think Larne or Alan, if he's going to be here, could explain a little better. But it's basically a combination of the SNR from the different detectors. That's also weighted by the chi-squared, which is just sort of a measure of the match in different portions of the waveform, so that, you know, this portion of the waveform might ring really loudly against this template, but it's just noise, so, you know, these portions would not ring so loudly. So you'd like to weight it by the chi-squared, which is what the effective SNR does. And then there's the high mass. Oh, yeah, so... For more details, see Satya, Lauren, and Alan's poster. There's the high-mass CBC, which is along the same lines. The Taylor F2 system has been, or templates have been replaced by EOB templates. And of course, you go for a different mass range. There's a little overlap. This one starts at 25, which is below the low masses 35 ceiling. It goes up to 100 mass total and looks for all sorts of mass ratios. That may change, but Alan has made some noises about restricting the mass ratios a little. But it does the whole triangle for now. And then there are about 3,000 templates for LIGO and Virgo. Just for LIGO, and then there are quite a few more for Virgo. Because of its different noise curve, it needs more templates to really see things well, to check things out properly. This is roughly the same as for the low mass. I think there were more templates for LIGO and fewer for Virgo in the low mass system. And then it's got the same steps in choosing what you call a detection. But again, see Satya, Lauren, and Alan's poster. And just so I have something that's not going to be shown on a poster, I got this off of Alan. He encouraged me to put it on my slides. So there you go. This is a Q-scan of one event that was found. So this is a spectrogram, basically, where you divide the signal up into little chunks and FFT everything. So that's a beautiful little signal there. It's SNR 16, so it is nice, and maybe someday we'll see that in real LIGO Virgo data, looking just beautiful like that. And because we've already seen it in Ninja, we'll be able to recognize it and go, oh, hey, that's a 49-25 mass ratio system. So then there's also the burst search, which this isn't entirely correct. They aren't Sine-Gaussian templates, but that's the basic idea. I was just talking to Lauren, and he pointed out that they're not templates, and I didn't get down here in time to correct that. So, but they're meant to be Sine Gaussian something. I know that much. And if you want to learn more, you could just see Satya, Lauren, and Alan's poster. And then as an example of something that you might learn out of doing Ninja, Sasha pointed out that there seems to be a bias. Now, this is very, very preliminary, so take this all, you know, with massive grains of salt, but just as a sort of toy model for something we might learn. There seems to be a bias in the burst search where he's better at detecting aligned systems, aligned spinning systems than anti-aligned. So just briefly, aligned systems have spin up, and then the orbital angular momentum is up, and that's a lot of angular momentum, and the final black hole can't actually hold that much. So when it gets close, it needs to radiate the orbital angular momentum so that, you know, you can get a non-superspinning black hole at the end. So there's a bit of a hang-up in the aligned case where it comes in and just sort of sits there spinning away, emitting radiation for a while. And Ilya suggested, I thought it was a brilliant suggestion, that you'd get down to this point and you'd be dumping a lot of power into these particular frequency bands. And that's sort of more burstish. So you'd expect to be able to detect that in the burst system. But if you actually look at the data, I just mocked this up with our data. And this is a set of systems where if it's got spins, the spins are, I think, about 0.63. And so the anti-aligned is in blue, non-spinning is in red, and green is aligned spins. And if you actually look at it, the anti-aligned looks a little more burstish than the aligned case. And even looking at the phasing, the aligned system has sort of more rapidly evolving phasing, which doesn't sound like sine Gaussian to me. So this is still a bit of a mystery, but it's a toy problem of, you know, something that we observe in the pipelines. We wouldn't have observed it with just, you know, injecting your favorite post-Newtonian system. You may have observed it using, you know, if you had injected EOBNR waveforms. I'm not sure, but it's good to go through and actually learn what your pipelines put out for you know, a given set of data, so that when we actually see events, we'll be able to say, you know, well, you know, we've now cataloged 10,000 events in LIGO, and astrophysicists are saying things about this, but there's a bias in our data. So, you know, it's useful. So moving on to parameter estimation, this is basically a slide from Ilya. And so the motivation for doing this is that doing science will actually require accurate source characterization. Just because you get a signal doesn't mean that you've learned anything. You want to learn as much as you can out of it. You want to learn, you know, this is sort of the way that you'll know what the masses are, what the spins are, and this will no doubt lead into the good tests that will show whether we've got crazy multipole moments that make this a black hole that we don't understand. So you really need this for doing good science. And the challenge then is that you've got a 9 to 15 dimensional parameter space, depending on how you count, and there are degeneracies in that parameter space. So, you know, picking out exactly what the actual value for the parameters is, rather than just giving you, you know, a big banana is a bit of a challenge. So the solution, you might take issue with Ilya's calling it a solution, but a good solution anyway is Bayesian inference, and then you do stochastic sampling of high likelihood regions to sort of refine your model, and yeah, just sort of see what gives you the best match, what system gives you the best match. And there are a few techniques used in Ninja 2. Monte Carlo Markov chain, there's nested sampling, and there's multi-nest. And I'll let Ilya or Alberto or anyone explain that if you want to learn more. And this plot is just a cute little example of, you know, trying to figure out what the masses are. There's obviously a great deal of degeneracy, but that little beauty mark just off to the top of the centroid there is where they found their most likely set of parameters. So, yeah, also see Ilya's talk on Saturday, or listen to it, as the case may be, for more information on parameter estimation. So we've certainly done a lot of work on Ninja. We've made very good progress, whereby we, I mostly mean Lauren. But there's still a lot to be done on both sides. So the next round of NR data will probably be due in about 2 months. Hopefully we'll get the MOU signed. The MOU devised and then signed. And then we'll be pretty much ready to just take new beautiful data and inject it. But to do that, we need to improve the data quality. I know, speaking again, only because I know them best, the spec waveforms, if you look at the spec waveforms that are in the repository right now, they look pretty terrible, in the time domain at least. In the frequency domain, they're a little more believable. But whatever lazy bum it was that submitted them didn't exactly have enough time to make them pretty, so they're ugly. And before the next round, we really need to make them as nice as possible. So to do that, there's a recent paper that I really like. So the problem with the spec waveforms was the two-time integrations to go from Psi-4 to the H that you need. And that's actually a non-trivial problem, but I think Christian and Dennis have done a very nice job of pretty much solving it, and I encourage anyone who uses Psi-4 to take a look at this paper and use their methods. I haven't actually done that yet. Another alternative is also to use Reggie Wheeler's Aurelie, and we're actually actively pursuing that in spec, and hopefully it'll be done. But we also need to validate the numerical waveforms. If you were looking at H right now for the spec waveforms, we wouldn't make the cut, I don't think. We'd come close probably, but we wouldn't quite make the cut. And we need to make sure that what we put in our final data is actually does meet the accuracy requirements that we set out from the beginning. And we need to validate the post-Newtonian waveforms because coding in post-Newtonian waveforms is also non-trivial. And I think it will pay to compare the output of various people's codes. And I think that's really the main issue that we really need to move on, because there can be huge, huge bugs. Speaking from personal experience, that you just some stupid typo somewhere and your post-Newtonian waveform is way off. Especially given that we have such long post-Newtonian waveforms in these hybrids, we need to make sure that they're just completely accurate. So we're setting up a system to compare the actual post-Newtonian waveforms between groups, and I would encourage everyone to try that out. And then, of course, we have to hybridize those last waveforms that haven't been hybridized yet. That'll be the data set, all ready to go into the data analysts. So for data analysis, of course, we need to get the MOU signed. Lauren, need to generate training and challenge data and then just analyze with all our favorite pipelines. So when you put it that way, it sounds like the data analysts have basically no work left to be done, but it's not quite the case. So to wrap up a little, I'll also point out that there are problems with Ninja 2. Hopefully there will be a Ninja 3 so that the project can continue and we'll do good science. Some of the problems are it's limited to non-processing systems, which I know is a contentious issue with some people. The mass ratios are all less than 4:1, and it's certainly not clear that those are all the interesting mass ratios astrophysically, so it'd be nice to span the parameter space a little more. Maybe there aren't enough waveforms. Maybe there aren't enough higher modes. We've all contributed to 2 modes, and I've seen some 4:4 and 3:2 and whoever else cares to put in whatever else. But it's not clear that those are enough modes, and that's actually one of the scientific objectives is to see the effect of higher modes. And then Harold, I think, is presenting a poster that's one of the possible conclusions. I don't mean to speak for him, but he mentioned that maybe the hybridization frequency is too high, so we need to generate longer. Are you nodding your head, Harold? Okay. So the yeah. So we just need to generate longer numerical waveforms. And Alberto brought up maybe using Ninja 2 waveforms in LISA, and I don't know if anyone would have a problem with that, but I think that might be fine if anyone cares to do that. And of course, we'd have to discuss it so that, you know, nobody's too touchy about these things, but yeah, I think it'd be fine. So then maybe I'll just summarize okay. So yeah, I think Ninja is very, very important for the whole endeavor of gravitational wave detection. Maybe not this particular Ninja, you know, any given project could probably fall by the wayside, but future Ninjas, I think, will have very important things to say about the actual procedure of doing gravitational wave detection and about astrophysics. So we've got a good start on the waveform catalog, but we still need to do work, especially with that post-Newtonian validation. And the current data set is just colored noise, but the new data set is expected in about 2 months. And so I think Ninja 2 is off to a strong start, and thanks to everybody for putting in so much work on doing that. And this is the last moment of my status as the NR representative, because the new one is Enrique Pazos. So congratulations. I don't think he's here. I didn't see him anyway, but is he? Oh, okay. So congratulations to Enrique in absentia. And that's it.
So thank you, Mike, for such a nice talk. And we have 10 minutes for questions.
So I would suggest that when you take your Psi-4 waveforms, either just hand the Psi-4 to the injection or something, because what I found is the best way to do that is just in the frequency domain, divide by F squared or minus 4 pi F squared.
Right, yeah. And that's basically the technique with some filtering thrown in.
And that works really fine, and you just zero out a few low frequency bins that you don't care about.
Yeah. But handing that to the data analysts, as you know, and telling them to do that is a little more work. Just changing to the new data format was actually non-trivial. So, you know, asking them to do that, we can do that. That's not hard. So, yeah. And certainly for now, I think we definitely need to do that for Ninja 2. Yeah.
So you mentioned the Ninja LVC MOU is to be signed any day.
That was tongue-in-cheek, the any day part.
I was wondering how much, seeing how LIGO works from the outside a little bit over the last years, I was wondering what a more realistic timescale of this would actually be.
Well, so Duncan is the one who, Duncan's got his hand up back there, and he's the one who told me 2 months, and I believe everything that Duncan says. So if he tells me it's wrong now,
it's because you're a fool.
That's it.
Mike.
Agreed.
Dave writes, he basically said of order 6 weeks to 8 weeks from when we get the response to the LIGO Virgo reviewers back to the LSC and Virgo. So if we can get that finalized by the end of this month, then hopefully by the end of the summer, we'll have we have an LSC meeting in September in Krakow, so hopefully by then it will all be done and dusted. I can't see it stretching up to the September LSC meeting. I'm hoping, what are we, July and August, so end of August basically, hopefully it will be done. So we have 2 months to work with the simulated data sets, and then we'll have the real data set to work on.
But assuming everyone gets their numerical waveforms polished up in time. So it's something to work for, everybody. Carlos?
Yes. Can you tell me if there is any technical difficulty in using the non-processing waveforms already available in the repository, incheck them, and just forget that they are non-processing and trying to find them? So I see a clear benefit that we wouldn't be accused of fishing in a barrel.
Yeah. Well, so I guess I guess one concern there is, So how confident are we of the post-Newtonian data that's going to go into the hybrid, and how well you can really match the hybrid and how accurate the numerical data is? And just injecting it into the Ninja data set that everyone uses, I think could cause a great deal of contention on, you know.
That's not the point, precisely. The point is putting something different in there and how efficient you will be in detecting it. So we can discuss some techniques, and I think these techniques have been developed already 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So, but the idea precisely is to put something different, not obvious, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, you look for it without knowing what it is.
Yeah.
I would say the worse the matching is, the better is for this point, okay?
Yes.
So see if you are just move out of the box and mm-hmm. be able to do something.
Yeah.
I think there are good chances, and I think the exercise is good. I was asking if there is something in the techniques you are using that is hard-coded for non-processing, things on a plane, or something that would prevent from doing a fair search.
Well, so I'm not one of the data analysts, but I don't think so. As long as you give, the LM modes that they can just inject the code, that, you know, it could go in fine, and certainly doing a search I think is very interesting, and I fully agree. And I am partially just playing the devil's advocate and giving the reasons why not to do that, because I do come down a little on the side of using precessing in this Ninja, but there were strenuous objections to that. So if anyone else has stronger objections, responses to Carlos, feel free to speak now.
I would just say what you've outlined here with these data sets and everything is nice. I think the good thing with the non-processing waveforms is we actually, I wouldn't say we systematically cover the space, but there's a pretty good covering of that space. And you could probably actually make some quantitative statements about how we can do with, you know, reasonable mass ratios and reasonable aligned and anti-aligned spins. To my knowledge, there are only a handful of precessing waveforms, so you're not going to make a systematic statement. I wouldn't be against, if we have some time, throwing out another data set that has some precessing ones in and letting people play, right? But I would like to keep them separate, because I think we can get pretty close to saying some really quantitative things about these non-processing waveforms. I think we have a reasonable cover of the space.
So just before Duncan speaks, I will point out that the Ninja science case does explicitly say that, you know, while there is a main paper that wants to be published, other papers can be published, certainly, and, you know, I guess it's just up to the data analysts to see if they, you know, are willing to do this. And I think it'd be interesting, but I'm not the one who does the work, so.
So Carlos, I think you give the data analyst too much credit. I'm not convinced we even have the aligned or nearly aligned spin case under control in the data analysis. So, like Steve says, if we can do a real systematic test just of that, we can build up the confidence to then look at the processing waveforms. And one of the criticisms that's come out, I think, both in the reports and that people like Sergey have voiced over email is, you know, are you, you know, if you use the same set of injections for training as you do for the challenge data set, are you just tuning to a specific set of injections? So one thing that may come up is holding a couple of injections back from the training data set or asking NR people to maybe, you know, between now and whenever do another couple of simulations that are just off that data set. Another thing that could be done is one challenge data, okay, we have a couple of processing waveforms in there, run it, and it primes the pump for Ninja 3, which is a more systematic study of processing waveforms. So I think Ninja 2 should really focus on the align case, because we don't have that under control, and we really need to study it carefully. But like you said, there's nothing stopping us from doing, having a quick look at precession, so we can say, well, we took a quick look at a couple of data points, and we really think we need to study this in more detail in, Ninja 3.
LIGO Virtual Collaboration to the proposed Ninja 2 MOU. In one of the points, they ask precisely about non-processing waveforms. I seem to remember that one of the questions or weak points in the proposal was the non-consideration of non-processing waveforms. What happened with that?
Well, I think the response is that I think the general consensus in Ninja 2 is to really handle the aligned or almost aligned case first, and then we'll do processing. I mean, everyone wants to do everything today, but in some sense, Ninja 1's weakness was its strength. The fact it was scope limited meant we got the project done in a timely manner and could move on to the next project. I think the response to the LSC Virgo reviewers is, look, let's handle the align case first before we complicate the project with precession, and then we'll look at precession carefully in the next phase. And the people in LIGO Virgo who were strongly pro precession that I've talked to seem fine with that. It's like, okay, we'll do the align case first and then do the processing case. I don't think LSC Virgo are going to reject the MOU because we're not going to do precession in Ninja 2.
And I think this is another example of each side sort of finding out what the other side is really capable of. Especially, you need to talk to the people who are actually doing the work. Data analysts could dream up all sorts of things they want us to simulate, but we wouldn't be able to simulate it. And we can certainly dream up all sorts of things that data analysts should do, and we can tell them that we should do it, but they might not be ready for that. And I think that's one of the good things about Ninja, that we really get talking to each other. And I am hopeful that someday soon those lazy bums will get off their butts and just do the processing.
Let's stop here because we have a break now and then a half-hour discussion session after Jeff's talk. Let's